Welcome to Random Trek, the podcast where I, Scott McNulty, watch a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight is Matt Iglesias. Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. So why don't you tell the folks where they might know you from?
Well, I write on the internet and am currently executive editor at Vox.com. Before that, I worked at Slate for a couple years, Think Progress, The Atlantic, been mostly, you know, blog about politics and economic policy, but I like to dabble in a little Star Trek writing when I get the chance.
Who doesn't?
Exactly.
Now, you brought up your Star Trek writing, and I want to talk about that in a second, but I have to ask you, what is your favorite? Well, actually, let me start off with, how did you get interested in Star Trek? Do you remember the first time you saw Star Trek? Was it, you know, for me, I can't remember a time when I didn't like Star Trek, but...
You know, it's difficult for me to pinpoint the exact moment, but that's because my father, and I think several of his friends, were big Trek fans from when the original series was on TV. And so my dad was incredibly excited when The Next Generation came on, always watched it, and I came to watch it from watching it with him. I don't believe that I saw the premiere when it aired, but sometime during the run, you know, I was watching them every week and, you know, got into checking out old original series on reruns, or I think we had some, you know, VHS taped. And so it goes back about as far as I can remember.
And I ask everybody this. What is your favorite Star Trek series?
So for me, the Next Generation is my favorite. It's the first one I watched, and in a sense, you know, to me it feels like it's the real Star Trek, even though obviously I know the original series is the original in a literal sense. TNG for me is the original one, and I think the pinnacle of Trekkiness.
Well, and I agree. I think that Deep Space Nine is in fact a better series, but I started watching around when The Next Generation was new, so it is in my heart my favorite, because that's my Star Trek. That is Star Trek to me. If I think about Star Trek, I'm thinking about Captain Picard and Worf and Riker, you know,
and a spaceship.
And a spaceship, exactly.
I mean, Deep Space Nine has a lot of great virtues, but I think on some level, a show that's not about a spaceship, it's not the Star Trek.
Well, that's good. They did add a spaceship later, though.
They did. I mean there's no Trek.
Well, that is true. It's just Star. Star Station. It doesn't
exactly
have as much
Trek
of a ring.
It doesn't, you know, but it's a good show.
Well, I like it because it has, obviously, it came at a point in time when television producers were thinking about arcs, which weren't really happening when The Next
Absolutely.
Generation was
you
happening.
Get, so. You get much more sophisticated, ambitious storytelling. Mm-hmm. But then there's Enterprise.
But then there's Enterprise.
Even
exactly.
later?
And what happened with Enterprise? That's the question I want to know.
Difficult to say.
It seemed like when Enterprise, and the episode that was randomly selected was an Enterprise episode.
Yes, when that's the only reason I would bring it up.
When Enterprise premiered, I was so excited because there was new Star Trek and Scott Bakula was on it, and I like Scott Bakula. I love Star Trek, obviously, since I have a podcast about Star Trek, for God's sakes. And then I watched the first episode, and I thought, Well, actually, I thought, when I heard the theme song, which I have talked about extensively on other Enterprise episodes, which horrifies me. But
it's a troubling theme song, although I will say it took me several episodes to become disillusioned.
Oh, you were on board for the first few episodes?
I was, and it was the kind of thing where, to me, the promise seemed so high on a number of levels. I thought it was a good idea to sort of go back. And also, you know, what you were saying about Deep Space Nine, right? I had always felt torn, or not torn, but television as a medium got more sophisticated after the end of TNG. And, you know, by the time Enterprise came on, it seemed like, well, okay, now the time has come to make a Star Trek show, but also to make, like, a really great television show,
right?
You know, which is going to have, like, these big stories, right? It's going to be not just a bunch of random crap happens to guys on a spaceship, but like the story of humanity's exploration of the stars, right? And it seemed like such a wonderful idea, and it didn't really work.
It didn't. I remember the exact moment, and it may not have been in the first episode, the exact moment when I thought, this is not the Star Trek that I know and love. And I've talked about this exact moment before, but it was when T'Pol and maybe Trip, I don't know, somebody, they were in a room, and they had just come back from doing something, and they had to strip down to their underwear and rub anti-radiation gel all over each other. And I thought, well, I know what's going on here, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Not the best.
No. Speaking of the best, you, in your career at Slate, you wrote an article listing best to worst Star Trek things in several categories. And you, in fact, did it for the series. And I was surprised to see your ordering Next Generation, as you said, number one for best, Deep Space Nine, second, Voyager, third, and the original series after Voyager, which seems almost sacrilegious.
That was definitely the slate pitching element of those ones. but, you know, I think the fact is that if you try to watch the original series in an unsentimental way, there's a lot of really bad episodes.
That is true.
Now, the best episodes of TOS, like, are really good. And you can see, like, it's on the strength of that, that I think those characters, you know, lived on in people's hearts. And that's why this whole idea came and, you know, why we were able to get some very good movies based on that cast and eventually the Next Generation. But there's like a lot of garbage original scene, especially if you don't. I mean, it's not Gene Roddenberry's. It's nobody's fault that they didn't have the production budgets or the available technology to do certain things at that point in time. But you know, the reality is that they didn't. I mean, it looks hokey. And when the stories are really compelling, you know, you don't care about that. But the bad stuff there, I think, is the worst of the whole franchise.
Well, I think that's true. And have you watched the remastered, digitally remastered original series
episodes? I've seen some of it, yeah.
Well, they've done a great job. It looks beautiful, and they have. I like the way that they have enhanced the special effects to make them what I think they would have done if they could have done it back then.
It's very nice, and especially for watching, you know, the best original series episodes. It's great to see them redone and the effects jazzed up a little bit. And, you know, you've got Kirk and Spock and everything that people sort of love from there. You know, so thumbs up. Same time, you know, so there's a lot of bad stuff going on there. Voyager, I think, sometimes gets a bad rap from people.
Oh, man. I have had a couple of people on the podcast who pick Voyager as their favorite series, which I find mind-boggling.
Yeah, okay. I would not go that far.
I mean, I have, when I started this podcast, this has been really a journey for me as well, because I've been the random Star Trek episode generator that I have seems to love Voyager. So I've watched a lot of Voyager episodes, which I also gave up on Voyager fairly early in the season. At least I thought I did, but every episode so far I've already seen. So maybe I've just blocked it out of my mind. So I remember distinctly just how awful Voyager was. But having rewatched the episodes, it's okay. I like Janeway a lot. I didn't like her when it first came out, but I like her a lot. She's grown on me. The other Seven of Nine, I like. I hate Harry Kim, and most of the other characters are forgettable. But
I think it is relaxing once you know that the series is over, and you know that they're going to stay in the quadrant until the end, and then they're going to get back. Because I used to have, when I watched in the first run, especially the first couple series, I had enormous frustrations about the sort of conceit and like Janeway's tactics around this whole question of getting home. Mm-hmm. And once you kind of put that out of your mind and just watch the episodes, you know, as Star Trek episodes, spaceship floating around happens, you know, you got to deal with alien life and Prime Directive and whatever. There's a lot of good stuff in there, you know. And as you say, like the Janeway character becomes much more likable.
Yes.
When you stop thinking of her.
When you're supposed
to be solving this problem.
Right, yeah. Why are you doing all this random crap? Just get your crew back to the right quadrant of space.
Right. I mean, no, you wouldn't. I don't think you would want her as a boss necessarily, but you know, she has her virtues. She has her moments.
So which Star Trek captain, if you had to pick one, or commander, would you want as a boss?
Well, clearly Picard.
I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, he's the model of leadership for the modern world, I think.
That's true. Although, you know, Kirk has his charms. He just walks in and punches somebody and it's done.
Kirk is great. I think, you know, you'd want Kirk to be like your buddy.
Right.
I'm not sure you'd really want to work with him.
No, he could be a troublesome boss, I think. He doesn't, plus sexual harassment suits alone, I mean.
Well, that's a lot of problem. But, you know, also I tend to be a sort of an agitated person. I get nervous. I sometimes overreact to things. And, you know, Picard seems like a guy who will, like, steady your nerves and make you feel like, all right, you know, I have some doubts about this plan, but the captain says it's going to work. You know, I feel confident. Kirk, you know, it's edgy.
But he gives you that roguish smile, and you think, all right. We may die, but at least we'll have a good time. We are going to talk about an Enterprise episode called Minefield, which you think, well, perhaps that's a clever title because it could refer to a metaphorical minefield, perhaps. But in fact, it is a literal minefield, although one could argue there are also metaphorical minefields being navigated by the characters.
That seems generous.
I said one could argue. I am not that one who will be arguing that.
There is definitely a minefield.
There is an actual minefield in this episode. That we know for sure. And in fact, well, I'll just get into what happens in this episode. This is a season 2 episode. Now, everyone who listens to this podcast knows, if you have to pick an Enterprise season to watch, you should pick season 4. But the random... of the universe has not picked a season 4 episode for us. And so it has picked one of these episodes that upsets Star Trek canon slightly.
Yes.
Which is always irksome, but that's because I'm a giant nerd. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's proceed, and then we can talk about canon.
All right, well, I guess anything that happens in Star Trek, in Enterprise, is canon. But,
sure, yes.
That is one of the problems when they came up with this whole idea. But anyway, so we start off with Captain Archer inviting Lieutenant Malcolm Reed, who is the armory officer on the Enterprise, to breakfast, to pal around and become chummy, I suppose. And we are treated to a very awkward interaction between Lieutenant Reed and Captain Archer. In the captain's dining room, which is lovely. It's pretty big for a small ship, I thought. They have Eggs Benedict, and Captain Archer just wants to chat about sports, get to know Malcolm. Malcolm does not really have any interest in getting to know Captain Archer, it seems, and it's just an awkward conversation that ensues. Although we find out that the World Cup is still happening, so that's exciting for you soccer fans out there.
Yes.
And also, this reminded me, I like Scott Bakula as an actor,
mm-hmm.
but I think he for some reason, he decided that he should play Captain Archer as a super stiff kind of guy, and I don't understand his choices there, but he always seems a little stilted and slightly uncomfortable in everything that he's doing. And maybe that's just Scott Bakula being uncomfortable in Star Trek. I don't know, but
yeah, I think maybe the uniforms are
the jumpsuits are not. He doesn't like them. so their conversation is cut short because they have come across an uncharted planet along their route, and so Captain Archer's like, "Well, let's drop by and see what we can see because that's what we're doing. We're explorers."
Yeah.
And they immediately go to the bridge because I guess the planet is like 2 seconds away, so they cannot finish breakfast. And I don't think either of them actually eats any of the breakfast. And off they go to the bridge.
I thought it was because the breakfast was so awkward.
Oh, that they just wanted to end it.
I'm giving them a little bit of credit here. It was not going well. So it's like, oh, yeah, let's go to the bridge and check out this planet.
Well, that is true. I would be like, well, let's just eat in silence because these Eggs Benedict look pretty good. And then we'll go to the bridge. But no, they wanted to get out of there. And so they go to the bridge, and Captain Archer's like, well, is there anything interesting on this planet? apparently there are some volcanoes, so Captain Archer wants to go visit a volcano. And then all of a sudden, the Enterprise is racked with an explosion, and they don't know what happened, because there's no cause for it. Hoshi is knocked unconscious. People are thrown across the bridge. Captain Archer yells at Reed. He was like, what the hell happened? Reed says, I don't know. Give me some time to figure it out. And then there's a weird scene where Captain Archer walks over to Hoshi, looks at her for 2 seconds, and then yells at Malcolm for not knowing what's happened yet, which I thought was very strange. But he's upset. And they figure out, oh, it was some kind of landmine. Not landmine, because they're not a space mine. That's it. It's a space mine. Hoshi goes off to sickbay.
She goes down to the sickbay.
She does. And which I found strange also, because they kind of just drag her away. They don't put her on a stretcher or anything. And I thought, shouldn't they stabilize her spine?
The 22nd century concussion protocols depicted in this episode are terrible.
I agree.
Across the board. They're dragging her around. They don't test it properly. It's very strange.
Yes. Dr. Phlox. I'm questioning Dr.
They've
Phlox.
They've lost a lot of our current medical.
Well, that's what happens when you put an alien in charge of your sick bay.
Right.
Although I guess that's alienist, speciesist.
Yes. Well, who knows? Maybe they have a more advanced understanding.
That's true.
Maybe are being excessively cautious.
That is true. But Hoshi is kind of important to have around, because apparently their universal translator is awful, and she is super great.
That's one of the big running jokes of it.
It's true, and it is an interesting thing, because in later series and the original series, you know, people, you could just understand aliens. So it's always interesting when you cannot understand what the aliens are trying to say to you. Although I do think they use Hoshi as a crutch to solve this problem very quickly, especially in this episode.
Yes.
But then, suddenly there's an impact on the Enterprise, and they think, oh no, it's another mine. And in fact, it is another mine. So they turn on their cameras on the hull to take a look and see what it is. And flickering on the hull is some sort of orb. They think, well, maybe it's a tiny, tiny spaceship with tiny aliens in it for a second. But Captain Archer rejects that, and there are no biosigns. And then I guess the cloaking device fails, and it reveals itself to be some kind of strange mine that has magnetically attached itself to the hull of the Enterprise. And immediately Malcolm says, I have to go out there. And I'm the only one that can do it, because I'm the armory dude. Which makes sense, and no one really argues with him, and I don't know why he had to be so vehement about it. But off he goes.
But a kind of a lack of any sort of professional redundancies is a theme in this episode.
That is very true.
When Hoshi is out of commission, there's no one else who can translate. It's not just that Malcolm is like the top armory guy. He's the only one.
But then in the beginning, they tell us that there are two other armory people. So I thought to myself, shouldn't there be at least two people that go out there and check out this mine?
I mean, in general, you just would think it seems like you want to build some kind of backups into your crew.
Especially if you're going to be out there for an indeterminate
years.
Amount of time. Yes, you want to have some redundancy.
Right. There turned out to be a lot of critical fail points in the crew, really.
Yes, the crew. The ship is not the failure here. It is the crew. I did like when there's lots of, apparently this mine has caused a lot of damage, and 17 people are injured. And so the sickbay, they have some nice quick scenes in sickbay with it bustling, and Dr. Phlox, someone's like, are we under attack? And Dr. Phlox, says, I don't know. And I just like the way he says, I don't know. He's like, I don't really care. That's not my job. I'm here to make sure that you don't die.
But he raises the question, right? So what do these 17 people do? None of them can translate.
That is true.
None of them can deal with a hazardous object. None of them have any medical skills.
Well, we know that one of them is the cook.
Right.
Probably. And his assistant, because someone serves them breakfast, who clearly is not a cook. So that's two of them, at the very least. It seems like the cooking staff has more redundancy than mission critical.
Exactly. Mind diffusing. So, all right. But so Malcolm goes out there.
He goes out there. And he can identify that it's a mine. And he thinks, based on his previous experience defusing mines that are similar to this mine, that he can defuse it. But he's not certain. And so Archer says, well, we'll need to have a backup plan. Can't we detach the hull plating around the mine and just eject it? To which Trip, the engineer, says, we could do that, but I'd rather not do that because that would expose our some kind of warp coil or something.
Impulse manifold.
Ah, the impulse manifold. There you go. You don't want to expose your impulse manifold. Lord knows.
Exactly.
And so Archer says, well, let's keep it as a backup, but I'd rather not use it. I have faith of the heart in Reed that he could do this. And so apparently Romulan space mines – oh, spoiler alert. It's a Romulan space mine are very similar to Earth space mines, I guess. And so with some scans, Malcolm can figure out what he needs to do. So he's fiddling around with it. But then all of a sudden – have I skipped anything? I don't think so. Not really. A whole heck of a lot does not happen in this episode. All of a sudden, one of the arms comes out and attaches.
No. It's they're attacked by the ship.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I have.
And it's skipped a giant part. It's in the course of maneuvering.
That's right. So yes, the Romulan ship decloaks. Well, one Romulan ship, I believe, decloaks, and
there's a dramatic irony because we, the loyal Trek audience, recognize it as a Romulan bird of prey.
Yes.
But the crew does not know what a Romulan is, and it's mysterious to them.
That's right. And so they hail them. The Universal Translator cannot translate Romulan. Although I thought Romulan was very close to Vulcan, so you would think that at least T'Pol would kind of recognize it, but she does not. And so they don't know what's happened, what the Romulans are saying.
And T'Pol doesn't recognize the ship.
She does not recognize the ship at all. And so then the Romulans shoot a warning shot, or two warning shots, actually, across the nacelles, very close. 20 meters, I believe, is what the measurement was.
Which is apparently close.
I guess it would be 60 feet. Seems in space pretty close. Yeah. And they're like, whoa, I guess they mean business. They probably want us to leave. We don't need the Universal Translator to translate that.
Exactly.
They probably want us to leave. And, of course, Hoshi is in sickbay, and they're like, we can't translate this. And Hoshi's like, let me go, Doc. I can translate. And he says, you'd be of no help in your condition. You have a concussion. So lay down. And so she's like, okay. And then I did skip over a bunch of stuff. So luckily they had apparently – so if you've not watched Enterprise before, they don't have tractor beams, but they have grappling arms. And on the grappling arms from, I guess, some previous episode, they have some kind of detector that can see through cloaked things. I don't necessarily remember the episode where that was involved, but they mention it very briefly. And so they deploy their grappling arms to figure out that they are, in fact, in a minefield – more than one mine, more than two mines, I should say, and that they need to get out. And then the Romulans decloak, and they decide, well, we really need to get out of here. And that's when Mayweather, who's their navigator, tries to fly them out of the minefield using a joystick. And it always bothers me for some reason.
And with Reed somehow still outside.
Yes, he's outside. They're going very slowly, apparently.
They even say, they make a big deal after, well, impulse engines only.
Yes.
Obviously, if he went to warp, he would die. But you think it's like, well, how slowly are they going? There's a guy stuck in magnetic boots on the outside of the ship.
Yeah, he's not too super secure there. And I think, I don't know. And it bothers me whenever they pilot a starship with a joystick. I don't know why. It just does. And they've done it before in Star Trek, so that's just the way it is, and I have to get used to it. But
absolutely.
I prefer a mysterious console that you just tap on randomly and things happen. But
touch screens, yeah.
Exactly. That's what the future, people. And so,
this is better because it shows him like wending through the minefield, not just laying in a course.
It's all about tension. And so Mayweather basically plays a video game in which he needs to dodge all of the mines and keep Reed on the hull of the ship. And as they're moving the ship, that I guess the mine freaks out a little bit and wants to latch on tighter, so it shoots out a little arm and attaches to the hull. But on its way to the hull, it goes through Reed's leg and pins him to the hull.
Yes.
Which is less than optimal. And this is the point at which he calls up the bridge and says, "Hey, there's a little problem." And I thought to myself, "Self, wouldn't they be watching and monitoring what's happening out on the hull? Because there's only one crew guy out there, and he's defusing a mine."
You would think they would have just sent a second guy in the first place.
Well, yes, you know? Barring that.
Yes, use the cameras.
They might just watch.
But immediately after that, Dr. Phlox has the only good idea in the whole episode and realizes that he can bring the text down to mm-hmm. sickbay. So Hoshi can read it there.
Which you would think, why didn't they just, send it on a pad or something immediately, or just patch her through to sickbay so she could listen? But
they get it down to her, and she's able to translate it immediately,
and with a concussion.
Right.
She immediately translated it perfectly, and she translates that they want them to get out of the star system because it has been annexed from the Ramulan or something? Ramulan?
Yes. Romulan Star Empire.
And this is where the point at which T'Pol says, "It's Romulan." And then there's, dramatic music. And then you think to yourself, well, she knows what the Romulans are. You would think maybe she could. But she doesn't know much about the Romulans. She just knows that they are a secretive race. And at this point in Star Trek canon, they have not even supposed to have met the Romulans before. So
right.
They should know nothing. Because that happens in the original series, and Enterprise happens before the original series, for people who may not be aware of what Enterprise is. Although, why would you be listening to this podcast if you don't know what Enterprise is? That's another one.
Somehow this whole incident never makes it into the Star Logs.
Yes, they strike it from the official record because it's just so boring.
Yes. And maybe Kirk is just not very studious.
That's true. He may have just skipped over it.
He never had to look up this random, boring episode.
He's like, I'm pretty sure we're probably the first exciting crew to meet the Romulans.
You could imagine it. Actually, as far as Enterprise continuity mishaps, this one maybe bothers me the least. They managed to make this encounter so unremarkable.
It is pretty.
That you can believe that it was just not remembered 100 years later.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. Many episodes of Enterprise leave me cold. And there are this episode. This is more for the end, but still, we're talking about now. This episode has many exciting things in it that could potentially be exciting.
Yes,
and yet it is a very boring episode.
Absolutely,
and I don't know why. And so Hoshi Translate is now fluent in Romulan, apparently. And so they have her translate a message about, we have a man out on the hull and we need to save him before we can leave. But honestly, we're not interested in the planet. We'll go once we get our dude back inside. I'm paraphrasing perhaps what their message will be, but you understand.
But then it gets really crazy. Because Archer
yes.
is the only person who can go at the second and defuse this mine.
Yes, speaking to your point about crew redundancy.
Right.
Because he can't – Trip says, I'm an engineer, so clearly I am the obvious choice to go because I have engineering skill. And Archer says, that's why I can't send you because you need to continue with our contingency plan. And I can't send – one assumes any of the many engineers that work for you, because I'm not going to explain why.
Right. Nobody outside the senior staff can do anything other than serve breakfast.
That's right.
As depicted on the show, right? I mean, so it's there is this whole other crew.
We don't.
But they can't do anything.
They can serve breakfast and they can be injured.
Right. They can't work on the hull plating scheme.
No.
So that the engineer can go. They can't work on the mine. The captain has to do it, and it's a puzzling, personnel arrangement.
Yeah, and you would think, now I am no Starfleet engineer, I'll say that up front, but you would think that detaching the hull plating would be something that they do, because you had to attach it at some point. So if you've attached something, you can detach it. So that's something that you would imagine any of the engineers on the ship can do.
In the whole episode, it raises the question, I mean, what was the plan if anyone was to die some mishap at some point during this indefinite mission?
Go back to Earth.
You just turn around. No one knows how the hull plating works.
Exactly. Hopefully it's not the navigator, or else because you wouldn't be able to find your way back.
If someone bites it, just pray to God it's the cook.
That's right. Please don't be the waiter.
But Archer goes out there.
He does. He says, all right, I'm going out there.
And the episode kind of turns into a character study.
It does. A boring character study. because Archer goes out there, and so they are trying to... I like the look of the scenes on the hull, and the actors are clearly trying to show that they have to move with caution because they are attached to, you know, the hull of a spaceship, and if they move too quickly, they might detach and fly off into space, which would be bad.
Yeah, and there's the spikes issue.
And Reed will not be flying off. So Scott Bakula has made the choice to walk as slow as humanly possible as he is going towards Reed, and all of his moves are super slow. Just annoyed me the entire time, but Archer arrives and he says, hey, I'm here to save you, and Malcolm says, well, just, you know, detach the hull plating or cut off my leg, and he makes a weird joke about it. Well, I'd suggest you amputate my leg, but if you did, the cook would be serving it as dinner. And I was like, that's weird.
Yeah, particularly because it would be stuck on the outside of the ship.
Right. It doesn't even make any sense.
That's the point.
How could it happen? It doesn't, even as a joke, it just doesn't make any sense. Archer, obviously, in the grand tradition of Starfleet captains, risks his entire crew to save one crew member. And so he says, well, you can talk me through how to defuse this overcomplicated mine.
Right.
And so Reed is like, well, all right. So he tells him how to do all these very strange things. And once again, I should point out that I am not, in fact, a Romulan weapons designer.
Sure.
But it seems to me that this mine is overly complicated.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know what you think about the many things you have to pull out and rotate and then reverse the directions in which you have pulled them out.
The whole mine field's purpose is honestly a little bit unclear.
If
it's meant to destroy any ship that wanders in, you would think the mine would just detonate.
Right. But it was malfunctioning. This mine's proximity sensor, apparently, was malfunctioning, so it did not detonate.
Right. But it could... It could alert the other mine. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of ways. I mean, you see clearly there's like a billion explosives hanging around in the sky there, and they're all incapable of blowing up the Enterprise.
They cannot. They don't even come close.
Yeah, so I don't know. But it's also not clear that the Romulans even desire that outcome, because they fire warning shots.
Right, they don't destroy.
Destroy the ship.
They could totally destroy the ship. There are two Romulan starships and one Enterprise that has been damaged already, so they would win. And they have cloaking devices.
But so if they don't want to destroy the ship, then what are all these mines? It's weird. The Romulans are inscrutable. So
that, yes, you can't.
We are told that explicitly.
That's right. So why we cannot? Ours is not to reason why the Romulans do what they do.
Exactly.
And so as they're disarming the mine, Captain Archer decides, "Hey, this is a great time to get to know Malcolm, because apparently." When Captain Archer is engaged in overly complicated technical things, small talk helps him focus.
He enjoys a little chit-chat.
Who doesn't? The last time I disarmed a mine, I loved a little chit-chat. So he talks to Malcolm, and he says, oh, hey, Malcolm, I know you come from a long line of Royal Navy officers. What's up with that? Why didn't you join the Navy? Instead, you're here on a starship. And this is when we find out that Malcolm has a fear of not water, but of drowning.
Yes.
And so he was very sad because his whole family has this long history of being naval officers, and he wanted to join the Navy, but he knew how to – he says, I knew how to handle a boat before I knew how to walk, basically. But he couldn't join the Navy because he had this intense fear of drowning, much like his uncle, who had an intense fear of drowning. But he got over it. His uncle joined the Navy. He decided to go into the submarine corps. And then, predictably, his uncle – there was an accident – and his submarine, his uncle's submarine, which he was under the chief engineer of, ran into a mine, dun dun dun, and was damaged. And his uncle stayed in the reactor engine room to keep the systems up long enough so that the rest of the crew could escape. And then he drowned.
Yes,
bravely sacrificing himself for the betterment of the rest of his crew.
Yes,
clearly Malcolm is hinting that perhaps. This is what Malcolm should do, and they should detach the hull plating.
Yes.
And Captain Archer soundly refuses to do this and says, I don't leave anyone behind, basically.
Right.
And if you don't like my command style, which Malcolm clearly doesn't, or he it kind of irks him a little bit, too bad. It's the long and the short of it.
Right.
And so we get a little glimpse into Malcolm's kind of angsty inner workings, because he has no hobbies and he doesn't like sports, but he is an honorable man who doesn't want to risk the rest of his crew, which is nice. And he also thinks there's too much chit-chat on the bridge.
Too much fraternizing.
That's right. He doesn't want to be friends with Captain Archer, and this is where we get a glimpse into Captain Archer and his command style, because he says, oh, I had a commander who felt the same way, but since we're going to be on this mission, and we don't know how long we're going to be on this mission, and we have to depend on each other, senior staff especially, since nobody else can do anything, we should be friendly with one another and get to know one another so that we can have bonds and, you know, get through this together.
Yes.
Much like we're trying to get through this very interaction together.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, so...
But then they don't defuse the bomb.
They don't defuse the bomb. They get close. They're going to do the last little defusing thing. And then, instead of defusing it, they rearm it somehow, and it's going to blow up. But, you know, he takes out a thing and turns it, and it stops. And apparently there's an internal detonator that they can't get to because it's too far into the mine. And this is the point at which Malcolm's like, well, I guess we're done. Just detach the hull plating and we'll go. And then the Romulans appear again and they say, now that the Universal Translator is working, they say, we know you have a crewman trapped out on your hull, but get the heck out of here. It's only one guy. There are 89 of you or something. I forget how many they said.
It's a lot. None of whom can do anything.
That's right. 87. What, 80 of them are useless.
They're just hostages.
That's right. But get out of here or we'll destroy your ship. We don't like espionage. So apparently, you know, they think that they're here to spy on this insignificant mind planet. But whatever. And so they're like, well, we really want to leave. But, you know, the guys out there, we can't. And Archer says, we're not leaving until we could save Malcolm. And so they come up with this idea. They argue a bit about – oh, wait. No, I skipped over a very important thing. So when it becomes clear to Malcolm that they will not defuse the mine soon enough, he takes matters into his own hands and tries to commit suicide basically and detaches his air hose and lets all the air come out of his suit. And then Captain Archer slowly walks over and takes out an auxiliary air hose from his suit and hooks it up to Malcolm's. And they show the air reading on Malcolm's suit is empty. And then Archer shares his air and Malcolm gets back his consciousness or whatever. So he doesn't die. And Archer says, hey, don't do that crap. Which I guess they were trying to make it suspenseful, but I kept thinking, well, you know, they're outside of the ship. They could just walk in and get more air and then come back out or send another crew member out with some more air. It's not too much suspense here. But they don't do that either. And so Archer comes up with a plan. He says, how long do you think it was between when I de-armed it and it rearmed itself and was going to blow up? And Reed thinks it was about 10 seconds. And Captain Archer thinks it was about 20 seconds. But either way, he has a plan. So he leaves Reed attached to the hull. He goes inside, gets a laser torch thing and some panels from a shuttlecraft, I guess, or hatches, I guess. Two hatches. And the plan is, which he puts into action, is they will detach the hull plating and they will go with it, Archer and Reed. They float away from the ship. Archer cuts through the arm, which arms the mine, and then they jump off because he cuts the two points that are pinning Malcolm to the hull,
right.
And they float away and they hide behind the panels. When the mine explodes, they get pushed further away, but they don't die, which is good.
Yes,
and then immediately. The Enterprise can detect where they are and scoop them up in the shuttle bay without any problems whatsoever. They do it super fast, even though they're in a minefield still.
Yes.
But they, apparently the mines have, are no obstacle to this maneuver, which seems odd, but unless this is like the worstly laid out minefield ever. And so Archer and Malcolm are safe in the shuttle bay. Phlox comes over and, you know, everybody's happy. Archer says, well, how long did you think that was between when it blew up and it was armed? And Malcolm says, 10 seconds. Archer says, it was I'm not going to argue with you. It was 20 seconds, and that's an order. And then kind of a laughter and a freeze frame, end of show.
And it's done.
And it's done. They're out of the minefield. And that is Minefield.
Yes.
Enterprise episode.
And I think that this episode, it in a way, it encapsulates everything that is disappointing about this series. You know, that you're coming later in the game in television, but you're stuck with a one shot, no arc. You are screwing around with the canon, you know, by introducing the Romulans earlier than they should be, but not in an interesting way.
Right. If you're going to do that, like that's a big moment in the original series. If you're going to kind of jump that ahead of time, you have to make it interesting.
Right. And get some reason. I mean, not to be a continuity, just a stickler about it, but it's that if really humanity's first interaction with the Romulans was at this other time, that should be an interesting story.
Right. They should have maybe even met the Romulans, but then it had to be put into top secret or something. No one ever talks about it because something shocking happened.
The Romulans are complete MacGuffin in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
If you made the aliens the unknown aliens, the whole rest of the episode goes exactly the same. So it's just cheating.
Well, Matt, thank you for joining me. I apologize that it was a randomly selected Enterprise episode, but it could have been worse.
No, thank you. Thank you. It's I think this is what, you know, makes the spirit of the podcast. This is what makes it work. It would be too easy to skip over these crucial moments in, you know, in planetary history just because the episodes are bad.
That is true. And I have found that the worst Star Trek episodes to talk about, at least, are the boring kind of mediocre episodes, which I think this squarely falls into. Because the awful episodes give you plenty of things to work with. And the great episodes are great, so you have lots to talk about. Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine, Season 2, Episode 11, Rivals.